Thank you, Honor. What an honor and a privilege it is to be part of this webinar. And that's because of those of you who join in today, individuals who have taken on leadership responsibility or will take on leadership responsibility in our schools across this country. And you have such an important role. It's a challenging one to provide that leadership, but you're developing the next generation that are going to impact your communities, your state, this nation, and for many, the world itself. So thank you for what you do every day. I have a mother-in-law who was an elementary school teacher, a brother-in-law who was an elementary school teacher, and now a daughter-in-law who's an elementary school teacher. So I have a real heart to provide information and insights perhaps into this area of leadership, which becomes so important in every school. I have 10 children. I probably should answer questions that might immediately come to the audience. They're all mine. They're all with the same wife. And yes, we know how it happens, as we sometimes are asked. And those children have moved around a lot because of my Marine Corps career. So we've seen a lot of schools over the years. And one thing that's common is that the leadership that's provided in those schools makes all the difference. So again, that's why it's such an honor and a privilege to join with you today. I am very interested in the fundamentals. I've coached the sport of lacrosse that's more or less popular, depending on where you're coming in to the webinar from, for the last 41 years or so at the high school and collegiate level as a volunteer. And one of the things I've noticed about great lacrosse teams at any level is that the really good ones over the long haul, they figure out what the basics are of that sport, and then they practice those fundamentals every single day to become better and better at them, and that's what actually leads to their success. I find the same thing is true in any kind of an organization, whether it's educational or nonprofit or corporate or military. You got to have the fundamentals down. And I believe that there are also fundamentals in leadership. And I was fortunate that at an early stage in my professional career as a Marine officer, I had a mentor who was a Citadel graduate, the college that's down in Charleston, South Carolina, who was a much more senior officer than I was, but took an interest in me. And he decided that he was going to explain to me one day what those fundamentals were. And he wanted me to remember them for the rest of my life. And he felt that with those fundamentals, there was a good shot at becoming an effective leader. So my friend's name was Tom Hemingway, and he talked to me about the three C's of leadership. And this is the story that he told me. Tom said that when he came into the Marine Corps, it was the late 1950s, and he was a platoon commander, which is the first level up of leadership within the Marine Corps, brand new officer. He had attended the Citadel, the college, for 4 years. He'd gone down to Quantico, Virginia for 6 months to learn about some basic tactics as a young officer. And now he had his first platoon, which was going to be of about 40 Marines. And under him was going to be a platoon sergeant. This is the right-hand man or woman for a Marine platoon commander. Typically, that platoon sergeant is a little bit older, a little bit more experienced, but they work for you. Even though they've had that kind of experience in rank, they are subordinate to you. So Tom said, let me tell you about the first platoon sergeant I ever had. I showed up and I found out the background of this individual. He had been in the Marine Corps a fair number of years. And because I was coming in the 1950s, this was a Marine who had served in the Pacific theater of World War II. This individual had fought at the Battle of Guadalcanal, one of the hardest fights for the Marines in the Pacific Theater, and then again found himself at Iwo Jima in 1945, fighting in that battle, continued in the Marine Corps, and went to Korea. He was part of the Incheon Landing under General MacArthur and eventually fought up at what was called the Chosin Reservoir, where a division of Marines had to face an onslaught from the Chinese communists who came into the war. They were fighting in below zero weather and very high altitudes, and it was quite the place of adversity, the Chosin Reservoir. So this Marine had stayed in after all that, had all that experience, and was now going to be a follower to my friend Tom, the platoon commander. So Tom decided on the very first day of his command that he would go to that platoon sergeant and ask him a question. What Tom said to the platoon sergeant, this very experienced Marine, he said, "I've heard all about your background. I've heard about all the places you've been and the things that you have done, and I stand in awe of what you've accomplished. Could I just tell you what I've done? I went to college for 4 years. I was down at Quantico, Virginia for 6 months, and now I'm your leader. And my question for you is, why would you follow me?" Well, that's a gutsy question to ask on the first day of someone who's going to be working for you, but I think Tom had the humility and the wisdom to ask that question. So this big strapping Marine with all that experience looks at this young officer and he says, "Lieutenant, there's actually only three questions we're going to ask about you. The first question we're going to ask about you is, do you know your job or are you striving hard to learn it? Well, we know you don't know very much as you start this leadership position, but we're going to be watching you. Do you ask good questions? Do you observe? Do you take advice? Are you willing to try? Are you willing to fail? Are you willing to pick yourself back up and continue moving forward? And then when you think you know it all, do you remind yourself that there's more to learn, to continue to grow in that position?" So that's the first question we're going to ask. Do you know your job or are you striving hard to learn it? The second question we're going to ask is, will you make the hard but right decision, even if it costs you personally? We want to know we're following a leader of integrity, someone who has a consistent alignment of their values and their words and their actions. So someone who's going to challenge something that is unethical that is going on, someone who's willing to pull someone back on track who's off track and not following the mission, not accomplishing what has to be done, and someone who's willing to go up against the boss when the boss has a bad idea or is also heading in the wrong direction. So that's the second question we're going to ask, and that is, will you make the hard but right decision, even if it costs you personally? And the third question we're going to ask about you, Lieutenant, is do you care as much about us as you care about yourself? Because we know you care about yourself. That's the default of all human beings. But we want to know you're going to have genuine concern for each one of us, not just the ones that you happen to have a connection with because you're from the same location or you have the same interests, whatever the case may be. No, we expect you to care about all of us, even the ones that are hard to like. We expect you to have this genuine concern. So those are the three questions we're going to ask, Lieutenant. Do you know your job? Are you striving hard to learn it? Will you make the hard but right decision, even if it costs you personally? And do you care as much about us as you care about yourself? If you can answer those three questions, I guarantee you, I and these other Marines, we will follow you. So Tom told me that story in 1978 when I first came into the Marine Corps and got ready to take charge of my own platoon. And because he didn't want me to forget what he said of those three questions, he said those are the three C's of leadership. Competence answers the first question. Courage answers the second, not physical courage, but moral courage. And the third C is compassion. Competence, courage, compassion. And I've observed over the years, not only my own leadership, but the leadership of others, and I found that those three questions are very, very accurate. That's what those who are looking up to us for leadership are actually asking about us as leaders. And if we're going to be effective as leaders, we need to be ready to answer those three questions. Do you know your job? Are you striving hard to learn it? Will you make the hard but right decision, even if it costs you personally? And do you care as much about us as you care about yourself? To me, those are the fundamentals of leadership. But I'd like to ask you a question right now I don't need you to respond in the chat room yet. We'll do that in a little bit. But just a reflection moment, as you think about those three aspects of leadership, competence, courage, and compassion, where have you spent the most time either being developed or developing yourself when it comes to those three categories? Have you spent more time working on the competence end of leadership, which might be communications and decision-making and planning and counseling and things like that? Or the second C, which is the courage, the character, the ethics piece? Or would it be the compassion piece, the caring about individuals? So if you just stop for a moment and think about your pathway up to being a leader and now perhaps continuing as a leader, where have you spent the most time thinking and developing? Competence, courage, or compassion? And how would you even prioritize the three when it comes to development as a leader? So let me have you take just a couple of minutes to think about that, and in your own mind, put them in order. How would you order those three C's? Well, I think for most of us, probably the order would be either competence, courage, and then compassion. In other words, we spent the most time on competence, some on courage, a lot less on compassion, or perhaps courage was at the top, character development, ethical development, competence being second, and compassion being third. I would doubt that many would actually have put compassion on the top as being the area that we've spent the most time in development, either through others developing us or us developing ourselves. And because of that, I would like to actually focus our session today on that third C, the C of compassion. To help us do that, I'm going to bring us back to 1984. In 1984, there was a number one Billboard hit. The lady who sang the song, it actually enabled her to win a Grammy Award and kind of took her off to be a star singer. And the name of that song was "What's Love Got to Do with It?" The picture, if you can see the slides, is of the lady who sang it, Tina Turner. Now, when I was a midshipman at the U.S. Naval Academy, a student there, I went in front of the whole student body, about 4,400, and did an imitation of Elvis Presley. I can actually do a Tina Turner imitation as well, but with today's social media, I wouldn't dare do that today. At the same time, though, I would like to share with you what the chorus is of that song. What's love got to do with it? What's love but a secondhand emotion? What's love got to do with it? Who needs a heart when a heart can be broken? Interestingly enough, in working with leaders for many years, if I put the word love and the word leadership next to each other and ask the leader to respond, many of them, maybe the majority of them, would say, what's love got to do with it? Well, I believe it has everything to do with it. And I also believe that it's impossible to be an extraordinary leader without having genuine concern for your people, all of your people, even the ones that are hard to like again, having that genuine concern across the entire team. Well, I'm not naive. I know that people can win awards and make money and build buildings and win battles and not have that love or compassion that we're going to talk about today. But I don't think they've ever been, those people, as good as they could have been as a leader. And I know for sure the people who worked for them never were as good as they could have been. So I think it's very, very critical to think about this aspect of what does love have to do with it and where does it fit into extraordinary leadership? When I went into the Marine Corps, we were taught to eat last. That as the Marines would come to eat one of their meals, particularly out in the field when we were on operations, we were told to show that we cared about them, that we would eat last. They would go through the food line first, and then we would do that. Well, we found a lot of techniques that had to do with how you were to show this supposed care that we had. But I also realized, reflecting on it, that you could do it very mechanically and actually didn't care that much about the people, a little bit, but not deeply. But then I was exposed to a man by the name of General John Lejeune. I never met him in person for sure. General Lejeune was the highest ranking officer in the Marine Corps in between World War I and World War II. We call them the commandants who lead the Marine Corps. And if you ask any Marine, give me the top 10 leaders of all time in the Marine Corps, General Lejeune's name would show up on that list. He was known as an extraordinary leader. Well, as a young officer, I was reading his autobiography, and I realized that I had not before that General Lejeune was a division commander in World War I. He commanded actually a joint force of both Marines and Army soldiers. It was a large organization. And on November 11th, 1918, his division was aligned along the Meuse River in France. Now, November 11th might be meaningful to you, particularly since we just had Veterans Day. It's called Remembrance Day in Great Britain and Canada and Australia and in New Zealand, because it's a day they remember the great loss of life during World War I. It was a brutal, brutal war. And General Lejeune was a major commander during this time. Well, on November 12th, the day after the war ended, General Lejeune is going through his field hospital, and he's talking to some of wounded Marines and soldiers. But there's one that catches his attention. He's a young sergeant, and he's sitting up in his bed, and he has an amputated leg. General Lejeune goes up to him and says, "Young man, what happened to you?" This Marine Corps sergeant, an enlisted Marine, looked at General Lejeune and he said, "Sir, yesterday we were taking a bridge across the Meuse River. Our responsibility was to go across the bridge and make sure that it was secured and it was in friendly hands. And as we were going across, artillery shells came in and shrapnel went into my leg. After the battle was over, they brought me back to this field hospital. And the only way they could save my life was to take my leg." General Lejeune said, "Did you say that happened yesterday?" And the young man said, "Yes, sir." General Lejeune said, "November 11th, this is when this happened, just yesterday." The young man said, "Absolutely." So General Lejeune said, "Did you know that the war was going to end any moment yesterday?" The young Marine said, "Yes, sir, that was common knowledge on the battlefield." So the general looked him in the eye and said, "So what caused you to go across that bridge knowing what you knew, that the war was going to end any moment?" And the young Marine actually had some tears well up in his eyes, and he said, "Sir, our battalion commander, Captain Dunbeck, a very young officer, brought us to the friendly side of the Meuse River and had us look at the bridge, and he said to us, 'I've been given the mission to secure that bridge, to take it into our hands. And I'm going across that bridge, and I expect all of you to come with me.'" And then the Marine looked even deeper into General Lejeune's eye and said, "Sir, what were we going to do? We certainly weren't going to let that young officer go across that bridge by himself. We loved him too much for that." When General Lejeune would tell that story, he would always say the following after telling it: "I've always felt that the incident I just narrated gives one a better understanding of the meaning and practice of leadership than all the books that have been written and all the speeches made on the subject." When I read that, I thought, that's a remarkable statement. And when I helped the Marine Corps stand up the Lejeune Leadership Institute, that's the focal point for leader development in the Marine Corps, since we were going to name it for General Lejeune, I wanted to find out everything I could about him. So I went to the archives and read his letters and his speeches and everything I could get my hands on. And one of the things that I was struck by was the word affection that he used so often. He saw it as a foundational element of leading, of caring deeply about the people he led, again, whether he liked them or not, but that he would have a genuine love for them. And that story, and then reading more about General Lejeune really caused me to think deeply about the relationship of love and leadership. So now we have our first true assignment. By the way, there's no test at the end of this. Well, there is a test, and the test is when we go back to our places of leadership and we have to lead. That's when the real test is given and the answer is determined. But for this reflection moment, I'm going to ask you to think about, why is love a critical element of leadership? And I'm going to ask you, if you're willing, to use the chat room, putting it to all participants and all panelists so that we can see some of the comments that are made. And please keep it brief, just a single sentence. Why is love so important for leadership? So again, if you want to take a couple of moments and jot a couple of notes down into that chat room for, again, both the panelists and the participants, we'll take a look at some of the responses perhaps that have been made. So Honor, I know you're going to be looking and I'll be looking.
Yes,
as well.
Yes, I will be happy to read them. This has been excellent so far. Thank you so much for the thoughts.
Great. So I'm going to stand by for a couple of comments that might come in, and then we'll explore perhaps in depth why love and leadership really are connected. Why is love so important for leadership? Simon Sinek, who wrote the book Start With Why, always says we have to answer the question why before we go forward as leaders or organizations. So if we're going to think about love and leadership, I think we definitely want to think about why is there a connection there and why is it important?
Excellent. So Denise writes, it's important to care about who you lead in order to have staff believe in you.
Great comment. Okay, well, I'm going to move forward, but I'm going to say that I don't necessarily have the answers here. I think probably everyone who's thinking about it has some of their own pieces that they're considering of why it's so important. I'm going to offer three, though, that I found to be very important as I've thought deeply about this subject of the why of love. Great. So we've had two helpful, and now we've had another that says, please, people won't follow someone who does not show an interest in them, in their lives of those who work with them. So very valuable input, absolutely. And I think we'll see these pieces come out in what I'm about to share. One of the whys of love is our people, all people, want to feel special and valuable. And I think that's true as they look at their leader. They want their leader to think that they're special and valuable. One of the things that I've done over the years when I've been in leadership positions is to always celebrate people's birthdays. When I've led large organizations, I've had to restrict it to those that are closest to me in the organization. But I found that everybody loves their birthday. Even the people that say, nah, I don't care if you know about my birthday. It's not that important. It's a special day. And this, of course, is just a technique. But when I taught in the classroom at the Naval Academy in the last years, one of the things I would do is collect up when the birthdays were of my students. And when it would get close to a birthday time, I would buy a little leadership book. I'd have the whole class stand up and sing happy birthday to this individual, learn a little bit about them to be able to say some comments about what they've accomplished or where they were from. And I was always just struck by what an impact that has. And I've been doing that since early on in my time as a leader. So, I mean, again, that's just a technique. There's other things you can do, but I think what they saw was, wow, he had to figure out when my birthday was. He got something for me and they felt a little special and valuable. And that can be very helpful for them to connect with their leader. What one story I always remember is that Admiral Mullen, and I know I tell a lot of military stories, and that's because a lot of my life was revolving around the military, but I think these stories absolutely apply to whatever organizational setting that we're in. It's certainly not just for the military. So Admiral Mullen was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, which means the highest ranking military officer in the nation. He was a 4-star admiral at the time this took place. I had met Admiral Mullen when I was a student at the Naval Academy in my senior year. I was dating my wife, Misty, at the time. Well, she was my wife at the time because you're not allowed to be married at the Naval Academy. Just want to make that clear. I was dating her, and then I would marry her after graduation. And she, in social events, met Admiral Mullen, who at that time was a lieutenant, a very young officer in the Navy, met her two times. And I had some interaction with him throughout my senior year. 1978, we go our separate ways. 20 some odd years later, he's the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and I'm an officer in the Marine Corps, and I'm stationed at the Naval Academy, and we're at the Army-Navy game in Philadelphia, and my wife and I are in the corridor of the stadium getting ready to go down to our seats. So we're kind of not in the middle of the corridor, we're closer to the side. And here comes Admiral Mullen, head of the military, with all the people around him, and they all look worried, trying to get him to the next place, and they have computers and grab bags and all kinds of notebooks and things like that, and they're basically pushing him, moving him forward. And I mentioned to Misty, I said, well, you know, that's Lieutenant Mullen. We met him many, many years ago, and he's now the head of the military. I'm not sure my wife was impressed, but she heard what I said. And then Admiral Mullen happened to look over towards us. I didn't wave and say, hi, Admiral Mullen, you remember me? I mean, I just looked at him. He looked at me. And then he turned his whole entourage towards us. They didn't know who we were. They couldn't feed him names or little hints or anything. He was on his own. So he came up to me and he said, Art, I haven't seen you in a long time. I understand you're at the Naval Academy. That's great. And said a couple of things. Then he looks at my wife, who we had met two times over 20 years ago. And he says, Misty, you look terrific. He said, I understand you have a large family. Tell me about them. Well, if you ever meet my wife, Misty, and you ask her that question, tell me about them, she's going to start with Christina and go down to Deborah and all the six boys and four girls of the family, and will probably give you excruciating detail. So here's the head of the military, who's obviously got places to go, but he asked the question. So Misty starts going through each of the children down the family. At about number six, I'm getting a little uncomfortable because I'm thinking he probably has some place to go, but he listens attentively all the way down to number 10. And at the end, he says, Misty, I'm so glad you gave me that update. I do have to tell you, I need to go right now because I do have a meeting that I'm late for now with the Secretary of Defense. So I thought to myself, wow, so the head of the military is on his way to a meeting really with his boss, the Secretary of Defense, and he takes the time to come over to us, remembers our names, knows a couple things about us, and then listens attentively to my wife. Did I feel special and valuable? Was I ready to follow him wherever he needed me to go? Absolutely. And the reason that he knew our names, the reason that he came over, is because he cared. And I'll never forget that particular incident as to our people want to feel special and valuable. A second thing that I've learned is that our people want to receive feedback in an atmosphere of genuine concern. Feedback's one of the most important things we do as a leader. We give good and we say what they're doing right. And at the same time, we have to correct people sometimes and we have to get them back on track. And I've learned that people want to receive that feedback because they believe we really care about them, not because we irritate them and not because it's a requirement, but because we actually care about their lives. I was at a unit called Marine Aviation Weapons and Tactics Squadron in Yuma, Arizona. It's the Top Gun School of the Marine Corps, like the Top Gun School of the Navy, but we're much better looking than Tom Cruise. But at that school is a lot of very talented individuals. And I had an officer by the name of Bob who worked for me. I was a major, which is four levels up in the Marine Corps, officer corps. And he was three levels up. He was a captain and he worked for me. He had a lot of talent, but he was a bit arrogant. And I felt as part of my responsibilities of assisting him and caring about him, I needed to confront him on that. Well, telling an arrogant person that they're arrogant, often it doesn't go very well. It was kind of a little bit of a tense conversation. But I think he heard what I said, but he went out very angry. I kind of let it be for about 3 months without following up or saying anything else. I was actually seeing some changes. I had offered him some suggestions. And then he got promoted. to the same rank I was. He was going to move to another section of the squadron. But before he moved, he went up to me and he said, Art, I'd like to talk to you about that little conversation we had a couple of months ago. And I thought, okay, great. So before he was subordinate to me and now we're of the same rank, he's going to really give it to me. But I offered to have him come into my office and he sat down and he said, I want to tell you, when you told me what you did, I was livid. Said, I went home and I said to myself, so why did he tell me this? To make himself look better? To make the squadron look better? To make the Marine Corps look better? Like, why would he tell me this? And he said, I have to tell you the reason I concluded that you told me what you did is you actually cared about me. And I said, Bob, it's true. And I think the only reason that there were changes in his life was that he received that feedback in an atmosphere of genuine concern. A third thing that I've learned is our people want to know that they can come to us when they face adversity. If they believe truly that we care, then they might just come to us when they're hurting. And I can tell you, even though these are not exact statistics, if we lead 10 people, 7 people are going through adversity out of that 10. Now, we might listen to their adversity and go, you think that's adversity? Let me tell you about my life. Doesn't matter. It's their perspective on their life and the adversity that they're facing. And if they believe their leader actually cares about them, they might actually come and share, not even expecting an answer, just being able to talk to someone. They might not, but inside they know they could come because we do care. And if they do and they share, we may not have the answer, but we can listen well and we can go from there and do the best that we can to support them. I was the commandant of the U.S. Merchant Marine Academy up in Kings Point, New York. There's 5 Federal Service Academies, Annapolis, West Point, Air Force, Coast Guard, and Kings Point. And I was the commandant at Kings Point. I'd been there about 2 years, and I had one of our seniors come to me and ask to meet with me. I had him sit in my office, and I said, how are you doing today? And he said, oh, sir, I'm not doing well. Well, I had known after about 2 years that that normally meant they were having financial problems or they were having emotional problems or girlfriend problems or boyfriend problems or whatever the case may be. And I had a little box. But then I said, well, tell me more. And he said, actually, my dad died tragically yesterday. And he explained the full story. And it was a tough one. And it certainly was not in my box. At the end of spending about an hour with him, he then asked me at the end of the conversation, sir, would you and Mrs. Athens please come to my dad's memorial service? It's going to be this Thursday. I was speaking to him on a Tuesday. It's going to be this Thursday here at the chapel at the Merchant Marine Academy. So I said, absolutely, we will be there. So we showed up for a 7 p.m. memorial service at the chapel. I remember at 7:05, kind of looking around, looking to see who might be the person actually doing the memorial service. No one kind of caught my eye, but at exactly 7 p.m., this young man came up to me and said, well, sir, whenever you're ready. I said, ready for what? He said, well, to do the memorial service. Now, I didn't want to stop this young man who had tragically lost his dad that week and say to him, hey, look, bud, there's a big difference between coming to a memorial service and doing a memorial service. Those are not the same things, but I didn't say that to him. And as best as I could, I did a memorial service. I was walking back to where we lived on campus with my wife, and I said, you know, he actually didn't ask me. I'm not sure what he was thinking. And then my wife said to me, well, he probably just couldn't get it out when he met with you on Tuesday, but he trusted you enough that you cared that you'd come through. I don't know if that's true. He might have just looked around and he just picked me out and said, okay, you do this. But I'd like to think that maybe my wife was right. And I think there's a lot of other reasons of why love is so important. But these are 3 to think about of why this love piece is essential for leadership. So now I'm going to ask you to reflect once again. I'm going to ask you to use the chat room again to the panelists and all participants to answer this question. And again, if you put it in a brief sentence, because Honor and I are looking at them and trying to read them quickly as they roll through. So how do we do this? What's the how of having compassion for our people. What do we do to have compassion? Are we supposed to, at the beginning of the school year, bring everyone who works at the school into our office, have them all squished in there and say to them, I just want to tell you, I love all of you. I love you. And I just want you to know that. Now, hey, we had a lot of work to do, so go back to work. But don't forget, I love you. I don't think so. Are we just going to let people do whatever they want? No discipline, no standards, no priorities. We just let people go. And that's how we do love. And I don't think that's it either. So the question is what are the keys to actually having compassion for our people? So again, I'm going to ask you to think about that a little bit. Write a quick sentence into the chat room. Again, putting it to all panelists and all participants. And I'll take a quick breather here to wait for some of those responses, and then we'll move on from there.
Just to recap, Dwight had written a comment there about leadership is dependent upon relationships. The deeper and more honest or genuine the relationship, the connection between colleagues or a leader and follower, the greater the commitment between them.
Fantastic. Absolutely. Relationships. It's about people. You know, we lose track of that sometimes when we have enough meetings and emails and spreadsheets and all kinds of things going on, and we do forget it's about relationships. And that's certainly a key element of that why of love, of why it's so important. So thank you for that comment from Dwight. So other than bringing the school together and telling them you love them, what else might we think about when it comes to the how of having compassion?
Laura writes, consistently listen with an empathetic ear. A fellow principal posted on a FP board yesterday that he came to the realization that every conversation you have with someone could be that person's most important conversation of the day.
Fantastic. Empathy. The empathetic ear, being good listeners, as I think it was my mom or dad, but I'm sure they got it from someone else. You know, we have two ears and one mouth, and there's probably a good reason for that design.
Denise writes, your daily actions speak for you. Listen and observe people.
Great. So there again, the word listen comes up. The idea that we have to be focused on others. If we're going to observe them, we have to be thinking about others and not just ourselves, which is going to roll very well into something I'm going to say here in a moment.
I think that might be it.
Okay. And I'm sure people have those ideas in their mind, but I'm going to roll on to two things. And I think it very much goes with the empathetic ear, the listening and observing. I think there's an attribute required if we're going to love our people. And I think there's an action that's required. And I've got two pictures there, and they'll be meaningful here in a second. So first of all, on the attribute, I believe if we're going to love people, the most important attribute we must have is the attribute of humility. That it's not about us, that it truly is about others. It's about the mission. It's about people. It's about service. But it's not about us. And I believe our natural tendency is to have it to be a lot about us, unfortunately. We just kind of move in that direction naturally. And I don't think humility is a weakness. Sometimes people think about it that people walk all over us or we retire into the corner and just kind of observe. No, I think it's much more than that. C.S. Lewis, the author and philosopher and theologian, once said that humility is not thinking less of yourself. It's thinking of yourself less. So as leaders, I believe we should have confidence, but it cannot be about us. And I have this picture, again, if you are able to see the slides, it's a picture of a baseball player who pitched for the Philadelphia Phillies by the name of Doc Halliday. Doc Halliday, in May of 2010, pitched a perfect game. He was the 20th pitcher in Major League Baseball history ever to pitch a perfect game. Pretty big accomplishment. I happened to watch his press conference. He spoke nothing about himself. He spoke only about the team. I was impressed. Then in October of 2010, Doc Halliday pitched a no-hitter in the Major League Baseball playoffs and became only the second pitcher in Major League Baseball history ever to pitch a no-hitter in the playoffs. Watch his press conference, nothing about himself, only the team. So now I was very interested in Doc Halliday, and I looked into his history and how he operated, and I found out that after he pitched that perfect game, he bought a Swiss watch for everybody on the Philadelphia Phillies, all the players, all the managers, all the bat boys, and I thought particularly interesting, everybody in the front office, marketing, finance, everybody. Everybody got a Swiss watch. Well, I found out what kind of Swiss watch was. It was very expensive. And then I found out that he put that watch in a presentation box for each person that he gave it to. And on that box, he had the date of the perfect game. He had their name on the box. I thought that was remarkable. He didn't put his own name on it. He put the name of the person he was presenting it to. And then this inscription, "We did it together. Thanks, Doc Halliday." I'm convinced you don't show your love and concern and care about people if it's really all about you. And I found that Doc Halliday, it wasn't about him, and that's why he could do what he did in a very spectacular way. We did it together. Thanks, Doc Halliday. So if we're going to love people, I think we've got to be humble. And it's not easy. It's a daily decision. It's a lifetime commitment. We never arrive, and it's easy to fall off the track. But that is required for love, to be humble. The action, I believe, is sacrifice. I think love is shown more by sacrifice than anything else. I've been married 41 years to Misty. I tell her every day I think she's beautiful. I'm so glad I'm married to her, and I'm committed to her for a lifetime. Nice of me. But you know what? I can say those words every day, and if she never sees sacrificial action on my part, she can doubt what I say. It is about action. And this road that I have on the slide that kind of looks like it's going to nowhere reminds me of Lance Corporal Mattson, who was one of my Marines, who was a terrible Marine when it came to performance and relationships. And one time he was in a bit of trouble because he was not getting back when he needed to. We were stationed in Yuma, Arizona. He was going to fly into Phoenix, get a taxi to the bus station, and take a bus from Phoenix to Yuma, and everything would be fine. But he didn't have any money, and he couldn't get from Phoenix back to Yuma in time before he was going to be really in an unauthorized absence status, UA, which is not a good thing in the military. And he called me up to tell me. And I thought about it. Yuma's about 3+ hours from Phoenix. And I said, "Lance Corporal Mattson, I'm going to drive up there and I'm going to get you and I'm going to bring you back tonight and then you won't be in trouble." So I drove up from Yuma to Phoenix on a road that looked like that one on the slide, picked him up, started back. And that road is pretty dark, and it doesn't have a lot of signs or anything. There's not a Holiday Inn sign where you can go, "Hey, Lance Corporal Mattson, you ever been to a Holiday Inn?" "No, well, I've been to get the conversation going." You're talking about life as you drive on that road. And I find something about Lance Corporal Mattson that took about 7 hours out of my life. And I realized in talking to Lance Corporal Mattson, no one had ever gone 7 minutes out of their way for that young man. Well, within a year, Lance Corporal Mattson became my best Marine. But you know, the interesting thing is we don't sacrifice with expectation of getting something back. We sacrifice because we really care about the person. And I believe that as we take over any kind of a team and we're the leader, we make the decision up front to love our people. It's not something we're going to decide at the moment when the crisis occurs. We decide ahead of time, "I'm going to love that person and I'm going to be willing to sacrifice for them." Now, I didn't go around picking up every young Marine all over the country when I was in command and in leadership positions. Sometimes people will say, "Well, how'd you know to do it with Lance Corporal Mattson?" Well, if you care, those are going to open up those opportunities and you're going to take them. So I think if we're going to love people, it has nothing to do with gabbing them around and telling them that we love them. I think it means we have to be humble, and I think it means we need to be willing to sacrifice. And as was pointed out by two of our participants, when we do those things, we're going to be more apt to listen, to be empathetic, and to observe, and take those actions that are necessary so people know we actually love them. I'd like to close with one final story, and then I'm going to open it up for questions for the final moments that we have together. Again, if you have a slide and you can see it, this is a picture of Corporal Jason Dunham. Jason Dunham grew up in Scio, New York. He enlisted in the Marine Corps in June of 2000, right out of high school. Goes into the Marine Corps, and by April of 2004, he's been promoted 4 times going up the ranks, and he's now a squad leader, and he's responsible for about 13 Marines. He's on the Syrian-Iraq border when the Iraq war was going on pretty hot and heavy. He had a checkpoint where vehicles would come up and down this road, and his squad would stop the vehicles, make sure there was nothing unusual about that vehicle, no explosives, improvised devices, etc., and then he would push them along. Well, on the morning of the 14th of April, 2004, a large Marine Corps convoy came through their checkpoint. They looked over the vehicles and sent them on their way to the north. Within a couple of minutes, Jason Dunham would hear small arms fire and rocket-propelled grenade fire. He put time and distance together and thought, I bet that Marine Corps convoy is being ambushed. So they go ahead and mount up in the Humvee, which is that armored Jeep-type vehicle that the Marines and soldiers of the Army use. He left a couple of his people down at the checkpoint, and Jason went up with the rest in these 3 Humvees. They got up to where the convoy was, and sure enough, they were being ambushed by insurgents. Jason dismounted the Marines, got them out of the vehicles, and decided instead of going into the main attack, that he would go around the side and actually to the back side of what was going on and try to break it up from there. When he went to the back, he would see 7 white vehicles with their engines running, and he felt there was something odd about that. So he picked up his pace in front of his Marines and went to one of those white vehicles. An insurgent, an enemy soldier, jumped out, and Jason immediately realized that that insurgent had a hand grenade in his hand. There are 2 things that have to happen for a hand grenade to go off. A pin has to be pulled, and then there's a hand grip that is close to the grenade, that when you throw it, the hand grip separates, there's a delay, and then it explodes. He saw that the pin was pulled, but the hand grip was still tight in that person's hand. So he grabbed the hand of the insurgent. They began to wrestle, and the insurgent had an opportunity to break the hold and roll the grenade towards Dunham's Marines. Dunham broke away from the insurgent and began to run towards that grenade. As he was running, he took his helmet off. He told his Marines to get down flat on the ground. And as he approached that grenade, he put his helmet on the grenade, and then he laid his body on top of his helmet. The grenade exploded, and 7 days later, Jason Dunham would lose his life. But he did it for his team. And in January of 2007, the President of the United States presented the Medal of Honor, the highest decoration for bravery, to the Dunham family. And on that citation, it said, for conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity, at the risk of his own life, above and beyond the call of duty. And then the citation would read the explanation that I just gave. What was so interesting? All the Marines whose lives had been saved because of Jason's action, they were all there. They all said the same thing about Jason Dunham. He was the most humble man they had ever met. And he was always sacrificing for them, whether it was back in the United States or whether it was on the front lines. So when he laid down his life for them, it actually did not surprise them at all. He understood competence, courage, and compassion. And he certainly didn't leave out the compassion part. And all those around him that were part of the team recognized his deep concern for them, because it wasn't about him. It was about them and his willingness to give of himself to that team. That's why compassion becomes so important for leaders. So it's question time, which means you get to use the chat box again to send a question that you might have. I will do my best at trying to answer it. We have a couple of minutes for that. Depending on how many questions there are, I might not get to all of them. but there'll actually be an email address on the next slide, and I believe Honor will also mention it. If there's a question you didn't get to, you can send this question through a wonderful young lady who's my executive assistant, who can collect that question, get it to me, and then I can get an answer back to you. But we'll wait a couple of minutes for questions, and then we will wrap it up.
So please use your chat box right now to type in questions. Art, in the meantime, I have a question for you. I'm just curious, with your military background, is compassion something that's regularly taught to new leaders? Is that part of the academy instruction, or is this something you just observed?
A little bit of both. Number one, we have actually placed an emphasis on it in the curriculum at various places at the Naval Academy. I don't want to take credit for it, but it was something that I felt strongly about, and that we needed to talk more about it. We find it in the Marine Corps in various places as well. But I think we still fall into the same trap of saying we spend most of our time talking about competence, second courage, and very little about compassion. And I find this true in organizations, whether it's nonprofit, corporate, it's the same thing, is that compassion tends to get the lesser of the priorities. And I don't think we have to talk about it all the time, but I think we definitely need to talk about it more than we do, and to emphasize to leaders how important this particular piece of leadership really is, because it takes all three. The Beatles had a song that said, "All you need is love." I don't think that's true with leadership. I don't think you can just have compassion. I think you have to have the others as well. You have to have the competence and the courage. But when we miss the compassion piece, we miss the opportunity to move from, in my opinion, ordinary to extraordinary, both as leaders and the teams we build.
Awesome. That's great. Yeah, I don't see much of that as being taught as a curriculum. And how do you teach somebody humbleness? You know,
I would have to come back for another webinar on that one. We actually do teach of how do we approach this key attribute of humility, because it is so central and so foundational for leadership and life, really. And I think there are ways to talk about it. I think there are ways to encourage it. I think it is still challenging. So I think it is possible.
Excellent.
Should I put the last slide
up?
Yes.
Why don't we go ahead and do that? Again, you know, feel free to type in any questions that you might have. Denise writes, "Unfortunately for some, compassion may make some leaders feel weak." Yes. Can you address that?
Well, that's where, again, with humility being at the forefront, I think that it goes back to C.S. Lewis's statement that humility is not thinking less of yourself, it's thinking of yourself less. So I think compassion can be combined with strength and confidence, because then it goes back to the other two items, is we have to be competent in what we do, and we have to have that moral courage as well. But I think, and I've seen it in the Marine Corps, that the most proficient leaders I've seen in the Marine Corps, and, you know, us Marines, when you're the finest, it's hard to be humble. That's, you know, one of our bumper stickers that we have. So obviously we have a lot to learn about humility. But nevertheless, the absolute best leaders I've heard, that I've seen and observed, have truly been, on the Marine Corps side, the ones that are absolutely the most compassionate. And people see their transparency, and they see the honesty that those leaders have. And again, compassion is not just this emotional feeling. It's a sacrificial action that's taken as well. I just see that Denise said it's easy to say you're humble, but to be humble takes a lot of work. As a matter of fact, if you're saying how humble you are, you're probably not. So I would agree with that there's a lot that goes with moving in that direction. But like I say, that's a whole nother subject.
Great. Well, many thanks to you, Art, for giving us your time and expertise today. Thanks to everyone who has participated in the webinar today. If you would like to revisit today's webinar, a recording will be posted within 48 hours on the NAESP website at www.naesp.org/webinars. It's going to be a free download for video and podcast formats for NAESP members. So, as always, if NAESP can ever assist you in your journey, please do not hesitate to reach out to us. Have an awesome afternoon, and we hope to see you in Louisville, Kentucky this summer for our summer conference. Thank you, Art.
Thank you, Honor, and to all those that lead out there in the schools across the nation.